Okay, well, good evening. Good to see each of you tonight. Let me grab my hymn book here, and we are going to sing a Christmas song for opening. But before we do, we're going to start with a word of prayer. So let's bow for prayer, please. Father, thank you for the opportunity to gather in the middle of the week, and I pray that you'd help us to have hearts that are settled before you, and I pray that you would speak to us in a very special way tonight. Help me to communicate the truths that we find in these scriptures with clarity and effectiveness. I pray that the Holy Spirit would take these truths and really implement them into our heart, and that they would shape our thinking and our character. And I pray that you would be glorified. Bless the kids in the back as they're doing truth trackers and tiny trackers. I pray that they'd have just an excellent time, and we ask it in Christ's name, amen. Okay, the song we're going to be singing is hymn 196, Angels We Have Heard on High. 196, Angels We Have Heard on High. This is like my favorite song to play in the Christmas season on the trumpet. So let's sing it out, verses 1, 3, and 4. Angels we have heard on high, sweetly singing o'er the plains, and the mountains in reply echo back their joyous strains. Gloria in excelsis Deo, Gloria in excelsis Deo. On the third, come to Bethlehem and see Him whose birth the angels sing. Come adore on bended knee Christ the Lord, the newborn King. Gloria in excelsis Deo. Gloria in excelsis Deo. On the last, see Him in a manger lay, Jesus, Lord of heaven and earth. Mary, Joseph, lend your aid, with us sing our Savior's birth. Gloria in excelsis Deo. Gloria in excelsis Deo. Good singing, and now we're all Latin speakers. Isn't that great? Okay, if you could, let's take our Bibles out. Let's turn together, please, to Ecclesiastes chapter 8, and we are working our way verse by verse through the book of Ecclesiastes. This is a very practical book, and I really enjoy working through this myself in my own studies. I will say, though, some of the passages that you get into, you're like, whew, that's a tough one. I'm trying to figure out what that's saying. And then sometimes there's a lot to wrestle with, even interpretively, when we're dealing with some of these verses. But the passage in front of us tonight is one that I think really interpretively shouldn't be a super difficult one, but when it comes down to the reality of understanding what it's saying and then living in the light of it, it is really practical and, yes, challenging. So Ecclesiastes chapter 8, we're going to begin reading in verse 5, and actually, just for the sake of context, I'm going to begin in verse 1 because I will refer a little bit to those verses before verse 8. They really are connected logically to verses 5 through 8. So here's what it says, Ecclesiastes 8:1. Who is as the wise man? Who knoweth the interpretation of a thing? A man's wisdom maketh his face to shine, and the boldness of his face shall be changed. I counsel thee to keep the king's commandment, and that in regard to the oath of God. Be not hasty to go out of his sight, stand not in an evil thing, for he doeth whatsoever pleaseth him. Where the word of a king is, there is power. Who may say unto him, what doest thou? Whoso keepeth the commandment shall feel no evil thing. A wise man's heart discerneth both time and judgment. Because to every purpose there is time and judgment. Therefore the misery of man is great upon him. For he knoweth not that which shall be, for who can tell him when it shall be? There is no man that hath power over the spirit to retain the spirit, neither hath he power in the day of death. There is no discharge in that war, neither shall wickedness deliver those that are given to it. Now, when we read these verses, I want to remind you that these verses are written in the context of dealing wisely with people that are in authority over us. Now, when we get into verses 5 through 8, we're not talking about the people that we relate to, maybe in our workforce or somebody who's over us in a certain context of life, but he's talking about the authority who establishes the authorities. We have to remember that there is always a chain of command, and at the top of the chain of command is someone who's ultimately in charge above all of them, and that's God himself. In fact, even when we talk about authorities and our relationship to authorities, there are times that our immediate authorities can step out of, we could say, the realm that God's given them, and there is a higher authority than them. And so we have to sometimes submit to the higher authority than the authority that we're dealing with immediately, that man or that woman or that individual. Ultimately, we are dealing with God. And so we think about that particular concept. In these verses, he's going from dealing with a powerful person like a king. Now he's talking about how do you relate to God in wisdom, because he's the highest authority. So let me give you a summary statement, and then we're going to look at a couple of introductory thoughts that are part of this particular topic. Here's a summary statement. Since we understand the need to relate to human authorities humbly and wisely, we should be sobered by our relationship to the highest authority, and that is God himself. God wants us to walk in humble wisdom as we relate to him as the supreme authority. And so let me give you a couple of introductory thoughts. There's no higher authority than God, and that means that his position and his power demand a very specific kind of response. Because of who God is, because of his character, because of his nature, because of his position, there's a way that we need to relate to him. In fact, this is a theme that we see all throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, not just in the verses before us tonight, but we see it in verses previous, and we also see it at the end of the book. In fact, the summary, the summation of the entire book is focused on this, how we relate to God in a fallen world. So the first example is Ecclesiastes 5, 1 and 2. Listen to what it says. It says, keep thy foot when thou goest to the house of God. Be more ready to hear than to give the sacrifice of fools. For they consider not that they do evil. Be not rash with thy mouth, let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God. For God is in heaven, and thou upon earth, therefore let thy words be few. So we could really summarize this statement by saying, when you walk into the house of God as an Old Testament saint going into the temple, when it comes to making a commitment to God, a vow, a solemn promise before God, a commitment before God, you better make sure that you have thought that thing through, because you are answering to the highest authority of all. You're answering to God himself. So, be slow to make those commitments, think those commitments through, and don't say more than you really should in a situation. I think really what he's saying is be humble in how you relate to God. Be humble how you approach God. Be humble how you talk to God. Be humble about how you talk about God. Be humble about the commitments you promise God that you will make. This is wisdom when dealing with the highest authority. There's so much that we don't know in life. There's so much we can't control in life. So we've got to be very cautious how we relate to God. Another example of this is in Ecclesiastes 11:9. He says, rejoice, O young men, in thy youth. Let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. Maybe a simple way to put that is when you're young, enjoy the fact that you're young. Do what is in your heart to do, but remember that what is in your heart better not conflict with what God says is right and wrong. Because here's what he says next. But know that for all this, God will bring thee into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from thine heart, put away evil from thy flesh. Childhood and youth are vanity. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, while the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. And so again, he's talking about the fact that there is a God in heaven who is the supreme judge. He's the supreme king, the supreme ruler. And so when it comes to how you live your life, you need to live humbly and submissively to the ultimate judge, the ultimate ruler. So enjoy those good days, but keep your decision-making in check that you're ultimately going to answer to God. That's what he's saying. So we're going to see that this is something that we see all throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. And so let me kind of keep this back in light of the context we just looked at last week. We need to remember that in the verses before, he's talking about human authorities. For instance, in verse number 1 of chapter 8, he says, a man's wisdom makes his face to shine, and the boldness of his face shall be changed. And so he talks about how when a person is relating to a man of authority, a king, a ruler, a judge, that instead of them having an arrogance about them, they should be humbled. And so wisdom brings humility. The second thing we saw in verse 2, he says, keep the king's commandment, and that in regard to the oath of God. And so he's talking about the fact that if you are in a position where you can advise a person in authority or relate to one where you're giving them input, then you need to speak honestly about the way that you see things. And Daniel was a great example of that. God put him in a position where he was influencing Nebuchadnezzar, all by God's sovereign hand. It wasn't because of anything Daniel did. God put him there. He spoke the truth. He was an honest man. The third thing was be patient. He says in verse 3, be not hasty to go out of his sight. And so he talks about the fact that when we're dealing with someone who's in authority over us, sometimes it takes a while to work through things. And so in that process, rather than quitting early, rather than giving up, we need to be willing to go through the process. And as we go through the process, as it works its way out, ultimately what do we see? We see the benefits of that patience. And then number 4, he needs to be principled. He says in verses 3-4, stand not in an evil thing. He doeth whatsoever pleaseth him. Where the word of a king is, there is power. Who may say unto him, what doest thou? And when we talked about those verses, we emphasized the fact that a person needs to be principled in how they relate to that person in authority. Once they make a decision, you're going to have to live with that decision. The people under that person are going to have to live with that decision. He has real power. He has real authority. So be principled in how you relate to this particular person. Oh, and there was a fifth, discerning. He says that the wise man discerns both time and judgment. And so we talk about time, we're talking about the timing of a matter unfolding. We talk about judgment, we're talking about how you go about trying to solve an issue. So when you have two people that have a conflict with one another, it might be that at this point in the conversation, there's absolutely no way that person A and person B are going to listen to you. They're just not. No matter what you tell them, they're just going to blow you off. That doesn't mean that they'll never listen to what's being said. It's got to be a process involved. And so a person that has wisdom will recognize, I know what this person needs to do, and I know what this person needs to do, and I know what they need to say and what they need to say, but they're not ready for it yet. So let's work through this process so that there'll be a time when they're ready to do that. And so rather than forcing the issue, pressing the issue, the person who's discerning and wise is going to say, I'm going to take this action when the timing is right. And so that's what he's saying. A lot of times, an action blows up in our face, not because of what we did, but because of when we did it. The timing is an issue. And then when he talks about judgment, he's talking about the procedure, how you actually go about trying to resolve a matter. So we can have a principle, we can have a law, but when it comes to the actual application of that particular principle, there's a lot of nuance involved in how to actually practically work that particular matter out. So a person who has wisdom knows when to take the action, and they know practically how to work out that particular principle. So the reason that I bring this to your attention is because Solomon is basically saying, look, if you have a person that you're relating to that has authority, they have real power, you've got to be wise in how you relate to them. You can't just walk up and say anything you want to that person. If you go approach them the wrong way, they're not going to hear what you have to say. If the procedure's wrong, if the timing's wrong, it's not going to work out. If you're quiet when you should speak up, it's going to be problematic. And so the idea is, he's saying, you need to know how to relate to that person of power. You need to tread gently. You need to tread wisely. You need to pick your spots at the right time. Well, if that's true about human authorities, how much more so is it true with God? If I should be humble in the presence of a human authority who is a flawed individual, doesn't always get it right, who can be very selfish and very self-willed, but I still have to humble myself in the presence of this person of authority, how much more so God who is in heaven, who is eternal? Now, I will say this. There is a very big distinction between the way that we deal with the human authority versus God. When it comes to dealing with the human authority, this is a flawed individual. And so because they're a flawed individual, there is a wisdom side to it that has to learn how to work with a flawed individual in a flawed world. When we're dealing with God, we're dealing with someone who is infinitely perfect and holy and righteous and wise. And so that side isn't there. But what he is doing is he's connecting the fact that there's a soberness in how we approach human authorities, and to a further greater extent, there is a soberness in how we relate to God himself. Wise people walk in humility and strike the right balance with dealing with people in authority. How much more so do we need to walk in wisdom and humility before God? That's what these verses are all about. So I want us to move through this text and look at these truths one by one. The first truth we find tonight is this, and I know this is going to sound really simple, but this is what the text is showing us. There is a supreme governor who personally works in people's lives. There is a supreme governor who personally works in people's lives. God rules. And when we say that God rules, we're not just saying he rules from a distance and he just watches things unfold and he wrings his hands and he says, I hope it all works out. That's not the kind of sovereignty that God exercises in this world. He is actively, he is personally, he is persistently involved in the circumstances of life. I want you to notice carefully how he words this passage. Verse number 5, he says, whoso keepeth the commandment shall feel no evil, and a wise man's heart discerneth both time and judgment. Because, that word because is important. It's explaining why the statement made in verse 5 is true. Because to every purpose there is time and judgment. Now, think about what he's saying. The first phrase, very important, whoso keepeth the commandment shall feel no evil. How can this statement be true? Well, it's true because there's a God who actively works in the circumstances of life. He works to make things unfold in a particular manner. In other words, the statement wouldn't make a lot of sense if things were just subject to blind chance. But because of the way that it's stated, whoever keeps the commandment will feel no evil. A wise man's heart discerneth time and judgment. It tells us that there is somebody that is working behind the scenes to make timing right and judgment matter. That's what it means. The second phrase, verse number 6, a wise man's heart discerneth time and judgment because to every purpose there is a time. That word purpose is important. That word purpose indicates that what unfolds has a reason behind it. And the one who is working in the circumstances for things to unfold as they do has a reason behind why he allows it to unfold as it does, or why he moves it to move the way that it does. That word purpose means that there is an intellectual reasoning behind why things unfold the way that they do. That tells us this world is not just falling to circumstance. There is a meticulous work of God behind the scenes and in the circumstances to accomplish what happens. How can there be a purpose and timing to events without an overseer and designer? That's the question we should all ask when we read these verses. If the word purpose is there, then it means somebody is overseeing, somebody is working, someone is designing, someone is shaping and moving circumstance. That's what it means. God is active in our lives. And that is a very simple yet extremely profound concept. Ecclesiastes 9:11, this is the next chapter. It says, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all. Now you might say, well, Pastor, that kind of sounds like a little bit of randomness there. But he's actually saying something different. He's saying, you can't predict what's going on, but there's somebody behind the scenes who can. Let me give you another example. Ecclesiastes 11:5. As thou knowest not what is the way of the spirit, how the bones grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of who? Of God who maketh all. So when we see that statement, chance happens to them all, he's saying from your perspective, living under the sun, who can't see the physical hand of God at work, it appears that things are just randomly happening. And he said, but as you walk away and you think about it from the perspective of the believer who has a Christian worldview, and of course, Christian's not the word we'd use in the Old Testament, but an understanding of God's sovereignty, he says, you do not know the work of God who makes these things happen. How a child develops in the womb. How a matter unfolds in our lives. These are all the works of God. Let me give you a couple of other examples. Proverbs 16:1, it says, the preparations of the heart in man and the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. So, you know, you have a situation that you got to deal with. You have a conversation that you've got to have. And it's really weighing heavily on you. I'm sure nobody's ever been in those circumstances. We've all been there, and we're all going to be there again and again and again in life. This is how it works. But when we look at that situation, and we are fearful, and we are worried, and we are burdened, and we all are, we all deal with those things. At the end of it all, guess what? The way it's going to unfold is something that God's hand is in. Preparations of the heart of man, the answer of the tongue, it's from the Lord. Proverbs 16:4-5. The Lord hath made all things for himself, yea, even the wicked for the day of evil. Every one that is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord, though hand join in hand, he shall not be unpunished. In other words, God himself is even taking the wicked in this world, and he is preparing them for the day where he will demonstrate his justice, and he will demonstrate his wrath. He will demonstrate his righteousness. Though hand join in hand, he will not be unpunished. I picture in my mind these people that are building the Tower of Babel. And God says, spread out throughout all the world. And you know what they said? We're going to make ourselves a name. And we're going to build a tower to heaven. We're going to demonstrate our might. In rebellion to God is what they were doing. And it says, it's so interesting how the text talks about it. It says, so God went down to see what they were doing. I mean, God is omniscient. He knows everything. But it was kind of his way of saying, oh, you guys down there who think you're really something, I'm going to come down and see what you guys are doing. I mean, that's kind of what he's saying. The impression that he's giving. And God says, okay, well, you guys can communicate. Well, I'm going to change that. I'm going to scramble your languages. You're not going to be able to get along because you can't communicate. And guess what? You're going to end up doing what I told you to do. It's the way God works. Now, he doesn't always do it on our timetable. We get frustrated with him sometimes, but this is how God works. Proverbs 16:9, it says that a man's heart deviseth his way, but the Lord directeth his steps. This is an amazing thing. So as a person is planning out the course of their life, and they think, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and here's how I'm going to do it, and here's how I'm going to do that, and they're planning it out, God is behind the scenes doing what he's going to do. In spite of what they have purposed to do, God's hand is working in the details. Proverbs 16:18, pride goeth before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. Why does pride go before destruction? Why does a haughty spirit go before a fall? Because there's a God in heaven who makes sure that that's what happens. In other words, as this person rages in confidence against God and rebels against God, God goes, I'll let you go a little further. I'll let you go a little further. Okay? I'm not going to let you go any further. And then the hammer drops. That's what happens. Proverbs 16:33, it says that the lot is cast into the lap, and the whole disposing thereof is of the Lord. Folks, something as simple as the rolling of a dice, you don't think that God's hand can be involved in those things? What Solomon is expressing in these verses is that God is in control. That's what he's expressing. That doesn't mean you aren't responsible. It doesn't mean that you're a robot. God allows you to make the decisions you want to make. He allows the people around us to make the decisions that we want to make. But God takes all of those details. You know what he does? Number one, he holds us accountable. And number two, he uses them to accomplish his purposes. And what God is going to bring out of those circumstances in the final analysis is our good and his glory. Principle number two, truth number two. And this one is very important. People get frustrated in life because as a general rule, they don't relate properly to God. Let me say it again. Such a simple truth. People get frustrated in life because as a general rule, they don't relate properly to God. Are you a frustrated person? Perhaps it's because the way you relate to the sovereignty of God is wrong. It's quiet in here. But that's true. Notice what it says here, verse 5. It says that a wise man's heart discerneth both time and judgment, because to every purpose there is time and judgment. Now look at the next statement. This is really interesting. Therefore, the misery of man is great upon him. You go, wait a minute. Let me read that again. A man's heart discerneth both time and judgment, because to every purpose there is time and judgment. Therefore, the misery of man is great upon him. Period. He knoweth not that which shall fall. Who can tell him when it shall be? You say, well, what exactly is Solomon saying? I'm going to kind of break it down this way. Fact number one, wise people understand the truth that God rules. A wise man's heart discerneth time and judgment. That's what the wise person does. He understands it's the time to take the action. It's the time to wait. It's the time to be patient. It's the time to not do this anymore. He understands time. You say, well, where does that wisdom come from? It comes from walking with God. He understands not just time, but judgment. How does a thing need to be worked out? So I can take this principle, and I can apply this principle in a real practical way, and as I apply this principle, then it unfolds the way that it's supposed to. So in other words, when a person understands who God is, understands how God works, and they're living in application in the light of that understanding, it makes their life go smoother when it comes to issues of decision-making and discernment. On the other side, when a person doesn't understand how God works, or they understand but they don't like how God works, or they kind of have a sense of this, but they're really not following through with it, guess what happens? They get frustrated. Now, who do they get frustrated with? They get frustrated with God. Because, you know, why doesn't he stop this situation? Why does he allow this to go the way that it goes? Well, they don't understand God. They don't understand his justice. They don't understand his ways. Sometimes God allows us to experience momentary struggle so that down the road in the big picture, he accomplishes something much bigger. A great example, this is Joseph. God allowed Joseph to experience the hardship of being betrayed by his brothers, sold as a slave. He was forgotten in the prison. He was lied about in Potiphar's house. All those things took place in his life. Now, those things were not good things. Those aren't things that God, he wanted in the sense of morally, this is okay. That's not what it's saying. But God said, I'm going to allow these people to make these decisions. I'm going to allow Joseph to go through these hardships because I know down the road there's something bigger that's bigger than this scenario and the thing that he's feeling in this moment that I'm going to accomplish here. What does God do? He ultimately preserves the Jewish people. I mean, that's really what's on the plate right there. That's what's going on. He preserves the Jewish nation because there's a man in Egypt that has risen to power by God's hand who ultimately is going to preserve those people because they're going to have food to eat during this terrible famine. This is the way God works. Sometimes we can't figure it all out, but in the final analysis, we recognize what God's doing is right. What God's doing is best. If I had all the details, then I would have to conclude what he's doing is right. So wise people understand this truth, that God is in control. But fact number two, this truth is a law that can't be thwarted. I'll put it like this, it's reality. So let's say, I'm going to use this illustration at the Lit Conference. So I'm giving a teaser, whatever. I'm going to call up some kids, I'm going to say, I want you to hold this baseball. I want you to turn it like this. I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to visualize this ball floating in the air. I want you to visualize it, okay? Do you see it? Yes. Do you believe that you can do it? No, I want you to believe you can do it. And I'm going to say, okay, let go of the ball and watch it float. And what's going to happen? It's going to hit the floor every time. Now, if one kid lets go and is still there, oh, boy. I was talking to somebody about it today. I was like, yeah, I'd like to get a ball that's got like a little thing right there and just go like hang there, you know. But I'm going to show something. It's such a simple thing. It doesn't matter what you believe. If it's not true, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. If you have convinced yourself that you can overcome gravity because you can visualize it in your head, well, we could prove that's not true. It doesn't work that way. There are certain laws in life that they unfold the way they do because that's how God made it. That's how he made it. So a person may look at God and say, I don't like the way that you did it, and I'm going to just do it my own way, and my own way is going to work. They're wrong. they're as wrong as the person who believes they can make the baseball just hover over the ground because they visualize it. It's complete nonsense. It's complete folly. We could sit here for a year and bring up another person, one after another, and they're not going to be able to make that ball float in the air. Why? Because it's a law in this world. That's what God made. Well, this truth is a law that can't be thwarted. Verse number 6, because to every purpose there is time and judgment. This is a law that God's created. There's a right time and there's a right way to do things. And God has established that. And you try to do it another way, guess what? It will not work. Now, it may appear to work for a little while. You may convince everybody around you that it works, but it doesn't work. You cannot overthrow God's purposes and how he does things. Fact number 3, people who do not live their lives according to this law will be miserable. That is a very simple, very straightforward way of saying, do it your own way and see what happens. It's not good. Verses 6 and 7, he says, therefore the misery of man is great upon him. He knoweth not that which shall be, and who can tell him when it shall be? This person will be frustrated because as they try to control their life and try to control their circumstances and try to do it their own way, they're just going to hit a brick wall over and over and over and over again till God finally gets their attention. This is the way that sometimes we live our lives. In fact, some of us, we can look at the life we lived before our salvation, and that's really the way we lived. You know, we were hitting a brick wall until God finally, you know, got our attention. And we got saved, and he changed us. Truth number 3, our human limitations should make us humble and dependent on God. Verses 6 through 8, it says, the misery of man is great upon him. He knoweth not that which shall be. Who can tell him when it shall be? There is no man that hath power over the spirit to retain the spirit. Neither hath he power in the day of death. There is no discharge of that war. Neither shall wickedness deliver those that are given to it. He's giving a series of statements and questions that tell us, look, there are certain things in life you cannot escape. There are certain laws that you need to just accept. This is the way that it is, and I need to just choose the path of wisdom, and I need to relate properly to God because this is the way that it is. The greatest example of this is the fact that we're going to die one day. Hebrews 9:27, it's appointed unto man once to die, and after this the judgment. Nobody's going to escape death. You're not going to make some deal with God and somehow get away with not dying. So he says this, who knows the future? Verse 7, he knoweth not that which shall be. We don't know the future. We don't. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We might be fully convinced that we know what's going to happen tomorrow, and maybe we get it right every now and again, but we don't know. We don't have definitive confidence of these things. No person can reveal to us the timing of how events will unfold and what we'll face in life. Verse 7, he says, who can tell him when it shall be? This week I went and visited a former church member of our church whose spouse passed away. This is amazing. This man got out of his chair and his foot got tangled on the corner of the chair and he fell and hit his head and he died the next day. Is that not sobering? Folks, we can't control the day we're going to leave this earth. Who could have ever predicted, as this man was eating his chicken and noodle soup, that he was going to stand up and that would be the last time he did it? I cannot imagine that. A person gets in a car and they're driving and they have no idea that this is the last time they're going to get behind a wheel. They don't know that. Our lives are vapor. And we live our lives as if we're going to live forever. Well, we are going to live forever in eternity, but we're not going to live forever on this planet as we are. It's going to be a day that it's the final moment. He says, who can tell him when it shall be? Nobody can predict this. No person can escape death. It's very interesting how he puts it. He says in verse 8, he says, there is no man that hath power over the spirit to retain the spirit. Neither hath he power in the day of death. There is no discharge of that war. Okay, so this is an imminent thing. It's going to happen. You don't know the day, you don't know the hour, you don't know the way, and all those kinds of things. But when it comes to that moment, you do not have any power to stop what God has purposed is going to take place on that day. I don't have that power. You don't either. There's no discharge of that war. You're not going to get to go home because, okay, you fought your battles and somebody else's turn to take your place now. It ain't going to work that way. In verse 8, he says, no person can outmaneuver God, neither shall wickedness deliver those who are given to it. You know how many very powerful people have raged in confidence against God? They lived their lives in rebellion, and then just like that, it was over. What's the point? Our human limitations should make us humble and dependent on God. So you say, well, Pastor, what's the practical application? Let me pull it to a close. How should we practically respond to these verses? I'm going to put it in simple terms. Walk in humble wisdom. Humility is so important. We should never rage in confidence against God and before God. We just shouldn't do it. We should recognize who we are and what we are and walk in humility. I think one of the simplest ways to express it is what we find in Psalm 37. It says, fret not thyself because of evildoers, neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity. They shall soon be cut off like the grass and wither as the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good. So shalt thou dwell in the land, verily thou shalt be fed. Delight thyself also in the Lord, he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. Commit thy way unto the Lord, trust also in him, he shall bring it to pass. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. How do we practically walk in wisdom before God, the highest authority? The first thing is, don't be a worrier. He says, fret not. If I know that he's sovereign, I know he's in control, then why am I worrying? Now, I'm not saying that in a condescending way, because I do too, okay? We all do. I'm not saying it in a proud way, but I'm saying, why do we do this? It's not logical. I mean, it's emotional. It's not logical. He says, don't fret. Fret not. Trust God. Trust in the Lord. In fact, he says it over and over and over again. Commit your ways. Trust also in him. These are several different ways of saying trust God. So don't worry. Trust God. And then he says, do good. In other words, do the best you can with what God gives you in life. Nobody's situation's perfect. Nobody's circumstances are absolutely wonderful and without any type of difficulty. So don't worry. Trust God and do the best you can with what he gives you. That means obey him. Simple obedience in the basic areas of life. Focus your joy on him. Delight yourself in the Lord and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. Actively make decisions in light of the will of God. Commit thy way unto the Lord. That means when I have a decision to make, I got to ask the question, well, what does God want me to do here? What does his word say about this? What principles apply in this situation? What do the godly people that have a little more experience in life than I do, what do they have to say about this matter? How are they advising me in this area? I'm going to trust God with the decisions that I make. But the last one is perhaps the most difficult of all. Be patient and have a settled heart as God works in what is outside of your control and responsibility. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. You know what's really amazing in life? When you're living through something, you expect God to move now. I do. I expect him to move immediately. I expect him to do it exactly how I think he should do it. And I think that if he doesn't do it the way that I think that he should, I believe that he's in the wrong. I would never tell him that. I'm not going to tell you that. But that's my attitude. That's our attitude. But what's amazing is if we can step back and look at our life as, look at this period of time, these years, sometimes what you'll see is that God didn't move there. Actually, what he did is he began to move there, but he moved over this entire period of time. And so progressively, he made changes all along the way. So from here to here, we got what I wanted here, but it took him 3 years. It took him 6 months. It took him a very difficult season. You say, well, why didn't God just do it like that? Because there are circumstances that we don't fully grasp ourselves, that God knows fully well, that keep him from doing it like that way and cause him to do it this way. And he did it in his own wisdom. He did it in his own wisdom. You know, how do people mature into Christ-likeness? Do we get saved and then radically we're a different person in every single area? We're like fully matured the moment that we trust Christ? Not a chance. You go and visit somebody in the hospital who's 85 years old, and guess what? They're still growing in sanctification. They really are. They will be able to communicate to you, Pastor, I thought I never would have to learn that lesson. I thought I had figured it out. And now because of this health issue, now because of these tubes that are in me, now because of this pain that I'm feeling, now because of this very difficult experience I just experienced, I'm learning that I'm not as mature here as I thought. Sanctification isn't like that. It's over a course of time. And that's the way God works. And so we've got to understand in our minds that God can move immediately if he wants to, but that's often not how he does it. In fact, it's generally not how he does it. It's generally a long process. And so if you're going to work through that process, you have to rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. That is probably the greatest application of the text in front of us this evening. Do you believe that God is sovereign? Whether you believe it or not, he is. Because he is, if you choose to live in the light of that wisely, guess what? You'll experience the benefits of that. If you choose to not live in the light of that, guess what? You'll experience the frustrations of that. Okay, Pastor, I want to live in the light of it. How do I do it? Rest patiently in the Lord. Trust also in him and he'll bring it to pass. Do right and let God work out details that you can't control. That's the way we have to live our lives. Let's bow together for prayer and ask the Lord to help us to do that. Father, help us to apply these truths tonight. These are tough concepts to live out. Walking by faith is very difficult sometimes. I pray that you'd help us to develop godly maturity as we rest in you and wait patiently on you to work in our lives. Help these truths to resonate in our hearts and help us to live victoriously in the light of these truths. We ask it in Christ's name. Amen.